Hi, my name is Mike Pettigrew, and I'd like to welcome you to the 30-Day Success Formula, this 6-CD training program. Imagine having a life where every day feels enjoyable and worthwhile, where there is both meaning and purpose in everything that you do, where you feel confident, invigorated, and empowered most of the time, where every time you set a new goal for yourself, you just know for certain that you can achieve it. Well, the great news is that you can definitely accomplish this, and you are a lot closer to achieving a happier and more fulfilling life than you may even imagine. Purchasing this program was a really great decision, and providing that you complete the course fully and take the right actions, your life can improve dramatically. Everything boils down to how you use what you learn and your consistency in doing so. So please, please don't just listen to this program once and resign it to the shelf to gather dust. And if you have purchased other courses in the past, and if they have just ended up on the shelf, please don't do the same with this course. Because this program definitely has the power to help you to totally transform your life. But you've got to be willing to do the exercises, or at least make some regular, consistent efforts based on what you learn. Your opportunity here is to create a life for yourself of fulfillment and purpose. A life that is happier, a life that is more empowered, and a life of continually increasing successes. So what are we going to be covering in this program? Well, this is what you're going to learn, and this is how it will affect your life. Firstly, we are going to explore the main factors that have contributed to the success of the world's most successful people, so that you can copy what they did and achieve success in your own life. You're then going to learn about the power of belief and how it shapes and controls your life, so that you can create beliefs that work for you instead of against you. We're also going to explore the subconscious mind and how you can program it for success. You will also discover how your dominant emotions actually mold your reality, and how you can use the power of emotion to create the life that you yearn for. Then we are going to explore the incredible power of gratitude and how you can use gratitude to unlock any painful or difficult situation you may find yourself in. You will also find out exactly how your mind affects your environment so that you can take control of it and create your heart's desire. We are also going to look at how you can create a life of contribution where you give willingly to others, because this is a really important factor in becoming happier and more fulfilled. Also, you will learn about the mind and the body, and how they influence each other so profoundly, so that you can create the optimum environment for self-transformation. You're also going to discover lots of other important things that can enable you to live a happier, empowered life of success, fulfillment, and purpose. So you may ask, who is this guy and why should I even listen to him? Well, I've been so fortunate to have had many wonderful teachers throughout my life, people like Dr. Harry Oldfield, Daniel Brinkley, Bruce Moen, and several other amazing mentors. And really, my experience is really a rags to riches and back again type of story. I grew up in a small town called Wicklow on the east coast of Ireland, and my father was a clergyman, a preacher, and my mother was a writer, and much later in her life, she published some wonderful children's stories. I have a brother who is 4 years older than me, and a sister who is 6 years older. And we grew up in a big old house, as I say, in Wicklow town, and it had a wonderful big garden and a field, and it was an amazing place to grow up. Now, my parents were never rich. In fact, it was quite the opposite, because back then in the 1960s, a clergyman was paid a very, very low salary. So it was always a great struggle to pay the bills and get by. We didn't have any central heating, and there were rooms in the house that in the winter we just wouldn't go into them because they were so cold. And I remember one of those rooms, which we used as a sitting room in the summer, often had ice on the inside of the windows in the winter. And we'd walk around the house in duffel coats in the winter time. Anyway, we had no TV until around 1970, when a friend of our family bought us our first TV. And we were very fortunate. We had two channels to choose from, in glorious black and white, of course. Actually, I remember a couple of years before we got that first TV, and how one night my parents got us all out of bed at around midnight, and we all got into our little Morris Minor and drove up the road to a neighbour's house who had a TV to watch the first landing on the moon. And I just wanted to go back to bed, and I couldn't really understand what all the fuss was about, because to a small child, everything is possible. And to me, landing on the moon seemed a pretty easy thing to do. Anyway, I didn't really know what science was, and I didn't think that going to the moon was such a miracle at all. But a couple of years later, I joined the Cub Scouts, which was run by my dad. And one night, I didn't go to Cubs because I was sick. So instead, I stayed at home and watched our new TV, and it was the very first episode of Star Trek. And from that moment on, I never wanted to go to Cubs again. I was totally and utterly spellbound by Star Trek. It was the most incredible thing that I had ever experienced. And I literally waited all week long for the next episode. And I'd often suddenly feel sick on Cubs night so I could stay at home and watch it. So Star Trek was really my first introduction to science and the universe. And it had a massive impact on me, and I became interested in everything and started asking all sorts of questions about life and everything. Anyway, an amazing thing. Did you know that 90% of all scientists that have ever lived are alive today? This shows how much science has progressed in recent years, and science is now starting to discover how our mind and our environment can influence each other. But we'll get into that a little later and in more detail. Anyway, some years ago, a study was done of scientists around the world, and it was found that a huge percentage of scientists became interested in science because of Star Trek. Now, I didn't always become conveniently sick just to watch Star Trek, even though it was an excellent excuse. When I was very young, I was often sick and missed quite a bit of school. And anyway, as I say, my parents never had much money, just really enough to survive from day to day. And I really don't know how my parents managed, but they did. And they did great. One thing that did help us was that my father was also a landscape painter. And actually, he still paints to this day, even though he's almost 87. And in many ways, he's as young as a 20-year-old. And it was Dad's painting that really enabled my parents to send my brother and my sister and myself to really good schools and give us a wonderful education, for which I am deeply grateful. Now, my grandfather, that's my father's father, lived with us for many years, and he was a very interesting character. He had been a mining engineer in the Andes in Chile for many years, and he was interested in everything. And for most of my childhood, my grandfather lived with us, and I really did learn a lot from him. And as I say, he was quite a character, and a very amusing character indeed. I had a very happy time in primary school, but later on, going to secondary school was a lot more challenging because I was bullied. I really had a rough time during my teenage years, and I had asthma from the age of 5 until around 13, and I really couldn't run very far, or I would end up wheezing and fighting to breathe. And as a result, I was always the very, very last to be picked for a football or rugby team, and I would hear comments every week like, "Oh no, we don't want Pettigrew. He's useless. We had him last week." And you know what? When you hear you are useless enough, then you start actually believing it. So I had very little self-confidence in my teenage years, and actually right up into my early 20s when I started my first business. Now, a very important event happened when I was around 15 years old. It was 1977, and my cousin Peter, to whom I was very close, Peter was really my hero, and he was 3 years older than me, and Peter died in a road accident, and needless to say, we were all devastated. But Peter's death actually proved to be one of the most important events of my life, because shortly after his death, his parents, in other words, my aunt and uncle, were given a book that had just been published by Dr. Raymond Moody in the United States. That book was Life After Life, and it was really the first publicly available book about the near-death experience. In other words, people who had clinically died, maybe on an operating table, but who had been successfully revived. These people had very, very interesting stories to relate, which in most cases were very similar. And these studies of near-death experiences actually provide a lot of really solid evidence that life continues after death, and that consciousness actually survives physical death, and that this life that we are living in right now is not our only life, and that life does go on, and that what we do here affects our choices later on. And this was the very beginning of my journey of discovery into death, the mind and human consciousness, and it's an area I have studied very deeply for most of my life. I also had a very deep interest in electronics, and as I say, all scientific things, I always wanted to know how things worked. And really, if you boil it down, if you go a few layers below, it's clear that I was really searching for what life is all about and how life works. So that has always been the underlying impulse in my life from the very start, how things work. But with Peter's death, that went to a far, far deeper level. Now, as I mentioned earlier, during my teens and early 20s, I had very little self-confidence until I started my first real business, and that business was in office plants. My business provided office plants to offices, in other words, tropical plants, plants that grow. And we provided a maintenance service where we would visit our clients every fortnight, and we had hundreds of clients all over Dublin City. Now, it took a long time to grow the business to that level, but about 5 years after starting my business, I really hit a brick wall. It had literally been hand-to-mouth all along, and my cash flow had always been very erratic, with not enough money coming in, and then all of a sudden, lots of money would come in. So it was a real struggle for the first 5 years, and quite frightening too. It was a real financial roller coaster for those first few years in business. Now, I know that this is very common in business in the beginning, but I really reached a point where I thought, no more, I've got to sort out my finances, because it was really causing me to struggle terribly. A lot of fear, a lot of worry about next week and the week after that. And as I say, it was very much hand to mouth. So I made a very deep determination, or rather, a very deep commitment to transforming the situation. Now, it's amazing what happens when we formulate a crystal clear determination or commitment to something. It's almost like we invoke from our environment the very things that are separating us from achieving our goal. And almost instantly, I hit a financial crisis bigger than I could possibly have imagined. It was so bad. We owed so much money to our suppliers, and there wasn't any hope of enough money coming in to pay those bills. And it was so difficult that I almost resigned myself to closing up the business and drawing social welfare from the government in order to survive. It was that extreme. But another part of me said, no, that is giving up. Work at this, transform it. You do all sorts of things that you've never even tried before. You've got to change it. That way, even if I had to close the door on the business, at least I could tell myself that I had really tried everything and I would have had no regrets. And you know what? It all boiled down to my own self-worth. It all boiled down to my own self-worth. And this was why I was not earning a decent income. My own self-worth had to change. And I had a series of experiences over a short period of time that were really showing me this crystal clear. For example, I wasn't respecting my own time, and therefore, as a result, the money that I was earning. I used to go out every week and buy several CDs, not even listen to them. Then I remember going over to the UK for a weekend, and when I came home, I discovered that the place where I was living at the time had been burgled. And guess what had been stolen? Yep, all my CDs and my CD player. So what did I do? I went out and bought an even better CD player and replaced all my CDs, the very CDs I wasn't even listening to. Anyway, a few months later, I went over to the UK again. And guess what I discovered as soon as I got home? Yep, you've guessed it. I had been burgled again. And all the replacement CDs and the CD player had been stolen once again. So this time, I really started asking myself, what would be the real underlying reason for such a repeated experience? I simply was not respecting my own time and efforts. You see, money is simply an exchange for time and energy spent doing something. That's what money is. A representation of our time and our efforts. And I was frittering my money away by buying things that weren't even important to me. I was really disrespecting my own self-value, because our time is the most valuable thing that we possess during our lifetime. We can waste our time or use it to do great things and make a difference in the lives of others. Now, this wasn't the only experience that was showing me my lack of self-worth. I had an elderly friend who came over from London, and he was staying with me, and he noticed how one of my friends would only call me up when he wanted me to do a favour for him. You see, I was the sort of person who would always do anything for everyone and allow myself to be pulled this way and that way and always saying yes to everyone. Anyway, as I say, this guy would often call me up, and the very first thing out of his mouth was always, "Hi Mike, could you do me a favour?" And guess what? I always said yes. I said yes to him and to everyone else. And even my next door neighbour started noticing this, how I was always doing things for other people but never for myself. And one day she sat me down and literally told me that I needed to take at least one night off each week and have some fun, a time just for me to do whatever I wanted. And this was amazing yet simple advice, and it turned out to be really important advice. This simple advice enabled me to gradually discover all sorts of internal resources and talents I never knew I possessed. So I'm so grateful to her. Anyway, as I was saying, this guy would always call me up and say, "Hi Mike, can you do me a favor?" And my elderly friend noticed this and suggested that next time he calls, be less available. And even asked the guy if sometime he might instead phone up for a chat instead of always looking for favours. And the next time he called, I said this to him very diplomatically and with really great care. And guess what happened? He slammed the phone down and I didn't hear from him again for another 6 years. And when he called 6 years later, you'll never guess why he called me. Once again, after a few minutes, he used the same old sentence. "Can you do me a favour?" Actually, I was amazed at what he wanted me to do. Now, he knew that I had a business and he wanted me to write a letter stating that his wife was an employee of my company and that her weekly wage was a certain amount. And he wanted me to tell these lies and effectively commit fraud on his behalf so that he would be approved for a mortgage, for a home loan. His wife, who was really a nice person, was not working and she'd never worked for me. But at that stage, I'd become quite proficient at saying no to people. Now, don't get me wrong, I help a lot of people and I love doing so, but I have learned how to guard my time a lot better. And I have learned how to say no. And this has been extremely empowering and liberating. It's so easy to allow ourselves to be run ragged by anyone and everyone if we don't value our lives greatly. And we can end up doing all sorts of trivial things that really don't make much of a difference in other people's lives at all. Anyway, let me get back to what I was saying earlier. With all these events, my CD player and my CDs being stolen twice, people really using me, and now my business about to go under and losing my one and only livelihood, my one and only source of income, I realized I had to improve my self-worth and I had to grow my self-esteem. So instantly, the very first thing that I did, even though I thought I would lose half of my clients, the very first thing I did was I doubled my prices to all my clients. And amazingly, every single one of them agreed. And I could hardly believe this. So instantly, in a single week, I doubled my profits, which was astounding. And developing this self-worth, even though the service I was providing to my clients was exceptionally good, I had always felt fearful and guilty about asking my clients to pay me on time. I had this whole fear and guilt around even asking for money. So my prices were incredibly low. So this was a very important experience. And within the next few months, my business became profitable. And shortly after this, it started to make a very good income. And I grew that business dramatically over the next several years. And over the next few years, I developed myself in a number of different ways, discovering all sorts of talents I never knew I had. And I built my self-worth and my self-confidence very considerably. And my successes grew in direct proportion to those inner changes. Now, it's important to understand at this point that when I started my business originally, I had made a very big determination. And that determination was, in 10 years' time, I would be doing so well in business that I could work full-time for society, doing voluntary work of some sort. When you have a very big, crystal clear determination and you repeat that determination every day, it's amazing what can happen. And as I say, 9 years into business, I started working only a day and a half each week, and I spent most of my time doing hospice volunteer work and other types of voluntary work. And it was very fulfilling. It was wonderful to be able to give back to society, to really help people. And I really felt privileged that I'd made the business a great success. And I really wanted to give something back. And as I say, it was very fulfilling. And I did this for 5 years, the last 5 years of that business, right up until the point where I sold the business to a multinational. And the sale of the business went very smoothly. And my wife and I were millionaires at that point. And we had enough money, or so it seemed, for the rest of our lives. Now, I've never really been materialistic. For me, money and financial security is there to free up my time so that I can make a potent difference in society. That, for me, has always been the motivator in all my businesses right from the very start. To reach the point where I don't need to worry about money and as a result have the time to help other people. But sadly, most of us work incredibly hard and only just get by. And this means that there is very little left of us at the end of the day and at the end of the week where we can actually give back to society. The day-to-day struggle to survive, if we remove that struggle and our time is freed up, we can explore who we are and why we are here. And we can start to make a big difference in the lives of others. And we'll look at this in a lot more detail later in this program. Now, when I sold my business, as I mentioned a moment ago, I thought financially we were sorted for the rest of our lives. But little did I know what life had in store for me. Through trusting the wrong people and making decisions based on fear, after only a very short period of time, we lost every cent we had in the world. Now, before I go on to that experience, I want to say a few words about what I did after selling my business. I sold my business so that I could spend more of my time helping people. And during 2002, I did this in quite a big way. I started an organization known as the Institute for Afterlife Research. And I was on radio and TV about 78, 79 times during 2002. I was sharing the scientific evidence for life after death and really making a difference in people's lives. And I was on some of the biggest radio and TV programs, the most popular programs here in Ireland and in several other countries. And for me, it was a year of total gratitude. I felt so grateful and so privileged to be able to do this sort of work and make a difference in the lives of tens of thousands of people. For me, it really felt like I was doing the work I was born to do. And I just loved that year. It was really fantastic. But then I remember when my wife and I were driving along the road one day. We had just been to the memorial service for my wife's grandfather. And we were just returning home. And I remember the very point on the road where I suddenly realized something awful about how our accountant had structured the sale of my company. I suddenly realized that even though he had said not to worry about paying tax on the sale of my business, he had told me that we would be able to squash the tax bill when it became due. But I suddenly realized, I had this spontaneous and massive feeling in my gut that he was wrong and that we would have a huge tax bill to pay, and there would be no way of avoiding this. Anyway, my intuition turned out to be absolutely correct, and we had a massive, well into six-figure tax bill to pay. Therefore, immediately, I knew I had to go back into business for our own financial survival, because paying such a massive tax bill would mean that it dramatically reduced the amount of time we would have to survive financially. Now, when you do things out of fear, you are prone to make huge mistakes, and that's exactly what I did. I went into business with someone who everybody told me I was mad to consider. But you know what? When you do things out of fear, you often do things that you would normally not do. And I went into a form of business that was doomed with someone who I should not have trusted. And the next year, we lost €250,000. That's around $350,000 in a single year. It was horrendous. And I reached the point where our little baby son was born in 2004. And I didn't have enough money to feed my wife or our son. I didn't have enough money to feed my wife or our son. And when it comes to the survival of your loved ones, there is nothing more frightening when you cannot support your loved ones. And every morning, I woke up wanting to vomit with the fear. It was just devastating, and I'll never forget it. Now, because of what I had learned about human consciousness and the mind, every morning I was able to break through by doing a powerful form of Buddhist practice. I was able to break through every morning and overcome that terrible fear. But you know what? In the middle of any great crisis, there is usually a nugget of gold. There's usually something wonderful to be discovered. And I'm absolutely convinced that all our problems and difficulties in life are simply there to enable us to grow spiritually. In other words, to grow in strength and in confidence and in courage and in wisdom and in compassion. And for me, I remember the very point at which this whole situation changed, because it was dire and it went on for such a very long time. Fortunately, my father lent us money. And as I say, my father has never really had money, not really. And when you're in your 40s and you ask your father, who has never had nearly as much money as yourself, to lend you money just to eat, it's incredibly humiliating. And I just felt like I was a complete failure. I kept hearing those words from years before saying, "We don't want Pettigrew. He's useless. We had him last week." I slipped internally within myself. My feelings of confidence and empowerment slowly and surely eroded, and I started expecting more terrible stuff. And you know what? When you believe something with emotion, and you are worrying and worrying and obsessing about it, and you even start to think you've lost the plot and that you are useless and that everything that you touch turns to muck, when you believe that, you get more of the same. And we'll go into how our thoughts and our emotions create what happens to us in great detail later on in this program. But As I say, I remember the point when everything changed. I started reading an amazing book, and I'm so grateful for that book. In fact, that same book was the inspiration for the book and movie The Secret. And amazingly, I discovered it in the very same month that the author did, and it also helped me to transform my life. That book was called The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles, and it's an amazing book, and it's all about achieving success and fulfillment through the power of gratitude. Now, gratitude had been a part of my life for a very long time, but you know what? Sometimes we need to learn something to a much greater degree of depth. And it culminated in me trying what today I call my crazy gratitude experiment. Now, I had nothing to lose at this point, as we had pretty much lost everything. And I was desperate for a way of changing the situation for the sake of my wife and our son. And reading this book, I decided to come up with my own experiment, where every 30 minutes of the day, I would check with myself to see what my dominant thought and emotion had been during the previous 30 minutes and replace it with gratitude. And I did this every 30 minutes of the day. And I must admit, it was completely artificial gratitude. I had no reason to feel grateful for anything. Quite the opposite. But I brought up artificial gratitude, and we'll look at this in more detail later on. And you know what? After about 3 or 4 days, amazing coincidences started appearing again. And I assure you, I hadn't seen synchronicities or coincidences for a very long time. Because having been a positive thinker for many years and really seeing the benefits of that, I had to learn the power of negative thinking. I had to learn what a lot of people go through on a daily basis. I had to understand how our thoughts and emotions create, how our dominant thoughts and emotions create. And doing this crazy gratitude experiment, the synchronicities started to appear again. And this was so encouraging. Now, the entire situation took a lot of time to overcome and completely transform. A lot of working very late hours for many months to completely transform the situation. But you know what? There was incredible learning throughout the entire experience. I can honestly say it's been one of the biggest and most wonderful experiences I have ever had in my entire life. And I assure you, I never want to repeat it again, but I'm so grateful I went through it because I now have the tools to help others no matter what the situation, no matter how many times you may have tried and failed, no matter how difficult a situation you may find yourself in. I know I have the tools to get myself out of such situations, and I know how to help others to do exactly the same. This is the purpose of this 6-CD training program, and I am certain that providing you do the exercises during the course of this presentation and put into practice with diligence what you learn, you will experience dramatic differences in your life. You will experience continual successes, great fulfillment, and deep happiness. You will also become empowered, and you will want to make a difference in the lives of others. Now, I've heard it said that if something does not kill you, then it makes you stronger. And I really see the wisdom in that saying, because my life is very different now than it was before this painful experience. And I've developed tools and learned all sorts of new skills and talents I did not have before. I'm incredibly grateful for the experience, and particularly to the wonderful mentors I've learned from. And later on in the program, we will actually look at the importance of mentors, because really, there is only so much we can learn during a relatively short lifetime unless we learn from great teachers who have walked the path before us. Now, at the beginning of this CD, I mentioned that you are most likely a lot closer to achieving your dreams than you may imagine. And before we move on to CD number 2, let me tell you a quick story that will illustrate this. A long time ago in Asia, there once lived a very successful baker, and he lived in a small town, and he owned the one and only bakery in that town, and he was very successful, and he was loved by the people in his town because he was very fair, very considerate, really looked after his customers, and he was a very pleasant fellow. Now, at the very height of his success, when he thought nothing could possibly happen to his business, something very significant did happen, and another bakery started in the same town, and then a couple of years later, yet another. So he had two competitors, and they were always undercutting his prices, and things became very difficult for him. Slowly but surely, he lost his entire livelihood, and he reached the point where customers were just not coming into his shop anymore. And very quickly, he lost everything. Now, one morning, just before he closed up his shop for the last time, a wealthy customer visited his shop and asked him what was happening. And he told him the entire story and how he had just lost his livelihood and that he was being forced to close up his business. So this wealthy man invited him to his home for a meal. And during the meal, at one point, the baker went out of the room to go to the toilet, but he left his bag in the room where they were dining. Now, the wealthy man, who was taking great pity on the baker, had a great idea. He really liked the baker and he really wanted to help him because he saw him as being extremely sincere and a really great human being. So he, as I say, he was very wealthy and he quickly placed a diamond in the lining of the baker's bag with the intention that the baker would find it and not know where it had come from. He wanted to make this gift to the baker anonymously. He wanted to be sure that the baker would have no idea who had given him this wonderful gift, this priceless diamond, which could completely change the baker's circumstances. In fact, the diamond was so valuable, the baker would never have to work again for the rest of his life. Now, after the meal, the baker thanked his host very much for his kindness, and he left the house. Now, after some months had passed, the wealthy man saw the baker, but the next time he saw him, his appearance had changed completely, because he was a beggar. He was begging at the side of the road, and he couldn't understand why the baker hadn't made use of the diamond, and he was extremely surprised. But again, as I say, he had given him this diamond anonymously. At all costs, he wanted to avoid the baker feeling indebted to him. And then the wealthy gentleman did not see that baker for a very long time. And eventually, after several years, he did see him again. And he looked even worse than before. His clothes were in rags, and he looked very thin, and he looked at least 20 years older than he actually was. But this time, the wealthy man went up to the baker and asked him, "Why haven't you used this priceless gem that was in the lining of your bag?" And the baker was extremely surprised. He said, "But I have nothing in my bag. I have only enough food for today, and there is nothing else in my bag." And the wealthy man asked him to hand the bag over to him, which he did, and the wealthy man showed him the bulge at the bottom of the bag. And the baker said, "Yeah, yes, but that's only a stone, and I didn't want to tear the lining of my bag in order to get it out, so it was just as easy to leave it there." But the wealthy man said, "No, no, that's no stone. That's a diamond. That's a priceless diamond. And I put it in the lining of your bag so that you would not know who had given it to you. I wanted to give this to you completely anonymously because you're such a fine human being." And I think that this illustrates the fact that success and all the things that you need to succeed are within you right here and right now. You possess everything you need to creating a wonderfully happy life for yourself. And all the resources you need to achieve great success and happiness are right within you at this very moment. And during the course of this program, you will learn exactly how you can use these priceless resources within you to create a life of success, fulfillment, happiness, and abundance. So again, I'd like to welcome you to this program, and let's immediately move on to CD number 2, where we'll get it all started.